Please silence all electronic devices.
Representatives Brawley, Sain, Hastings, Martin, Setzer, and Soka are recognized.
So the bottom line is, folks, there are a lot of bad people out there.
I'm Elizabeth Dole, and I approve this message.
You're fired!
You know, the guy that used to sit in this chair had a saying, if you think everybody's good, you ain't met everybody.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the WUNC studios at the Legislative Building in downtown Raleigh, it is Friday, May 12th, 2017. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Glad to have you along. For the WUNC Politics Podcast, we are discussing the Senate budget on this edition with senior political reporter from Spectrum News, Loretta Beniti. Hi, Loretta. How are you?
Tired.
Yeah. So here's the deal. Most people who listen to the podcast probably know this, but there need to be two votes on bills, and they need to take place, for the most part, on different days. So the expectation was that the Senate budget would be voted on last night, and it was 8:30-ish. Then I went home. Most other people went home. There was going to be a third reading after midnight, a third vote. Thought it was going to be quick. It was not. Sorry to make you go through your personal hell again. What happened after midnight this morning?
So we've seen these midnight sessions happen before, and normally what happens then is we're into the new day, and the only reason that they're meeting at that time is because it has to be a new day. They come in, they read the bill, and they vote on it. This time they came in, they read the bill, and Democrats stood up and started asking questions, and then a few minutes later they started offering amendments, which was a little bit surprising considering during the earlier in the day vote, they hadn't offered a single amendment. Instead had just chosen to talk about the things they didn't like in the bill. So by the time we got to amendment number 6, Senator Berger called Senator Blue up to the dais, come talk to him. I think he kind of wanted to know how long this was going to go on for. You could definitely see the frustration. You saw Senator Rabin head up there. You saw Senator Brown, the chief of staff for Senator Berger was up there. Ultimately, by the time Senator Blue went back to his seat, Senator Berger said, we need a little bit of time to work on some stuff. And they went in recess until 2:30 in the morning. 2:30.
This morning.
Yes. So here we are. It's about 12:45 right now, and now we have nothing to do until 2:30 in the morning. And you know what legislators do during these recesses. You know, some of them literally took a nap on the Senate floor. Some of them went downstairs and started blasting music and having a little dance party downstairs. Some stewed. You saw them quite angry that they were having to do this. Then Republicans decided to caucus. Yeah. At about 2:15, they went behind closed doors, and we knew something was up.
Real quick, Democrats have no power. Veto-proof majorities, we know this. Republicans, there haven't been amendments during the Senate budget process in recent years. So just the mere fact that the Democrats are doing this after midnight is, I don't know if I want to call it a little bit of a middle finger, a little bit of a spit in the face. I mean, it is they're boys being boys, and obviously there are women in the Democratic caucus as well, but they're testing their authority, and it ticked the Republicans off. And what was your expectation as we kind of worked through this early morning saga? You were thinking there was going to be some retribution or something coming maybe out of Republican caucus?
When you see them take that kind of a break and them call a caucus at that time in the morning, you know nothing good can come out of that. I mean, you know that they're planning something. You're going to try to fool us about how you're doing this. We'll wait till you see what we can do to you, which is a little bit what ended up happening. Probably not as severe as some of us had wondered if it would happen. But, you know, they came back in and there was an amendment on the table from Senator Robinson and Senator Brett Jackson, who is one of the head budget writers, said, I have a substitute amendment for you. And quickly went through it, said it was money for opioid pilot programs, which is something that we had been hearing the Democrats talk about. We've been hearing a lot of folks
both
talk about.
Both parties in tune with that, yes.
So here's what we're going to do. Let's vote on it. They voted on it. And Senator John Davis stood up and said, wait a second. What did we just vote on? Because this doesn't even look like the amendment that's on the dashboard. Well, if he had forwarded all the way to the bottom of the amendment, it did say, oh, and money's going to go towards opioids. But the front two pages of the amendment was, Where are we getting that money? Oh, we're taking away money from an Eastern North Carolina program. We're taking money away from the lobbyist in the governor's office who, they said, well, you must not have done a good job if you didn't get us any more Hurricane Matthew funding. We're taking away some park rangers. I mean, they just took away things that they didn't mention before there was a vote.
Any indication that, I'm going to call it a stunt, a political maneuver, that's maybe a better word, the maneuver that was used early this morning, do we have any indication if it came from the governor's office, or was this Senate Democrats acting alone, or we don't know?
I think that the Senate Democrats are so sick and tired of not having any sort of a voice. They're such a small caucus. They know they can't get anything passed. They really cannot get anything passed. They had tried a different maneuver earlier in the night in this whole scripted debate that they had going on,
right,
which was a new tactic for them. But it allowed them 30 minutes uninterrupted of debate on the bill by them passing the debate back and forth. And I literally watched them reading a script. They all had a packet of paper in front of them that they were reading from, a script for it. So they had already done that. And I think in that interim that they had before the 12 o'clock session, they all went out to dinner. And I think they said, wait a second, here's an idea. Now we can try this.
A couple of cocktails. Anything is possible. I said it. Loretta Beniti is your guest on the WUNC Politics podcast. So eventually, the Senate did reconvene this morning. No amendments from the Democrats were passed. There were some Republican amendments that moved forward, and the Senate gave final approval to its version of the budget at 3:08 a.m., I believe the docket said. You got out of here at 5. We'll call this mile 10 or 12 of the budget marathon. We heard from the governor a couple months ago. The Senate House budget will be out in the next probably 2 weeks, and then they will conference. The indication is that this all could be wrapped up by June 15th. We'll get to some of those negotiations in a second. Specifically to the Senate budget, what surprised you, if anything, coming out of – I mean, we've talked about the big numbers, the $22.9 billion, the 2.5 spending growth, $600 more for education, and a lot of cuts, obviously, or some cuts, I mean, across the board. But let's start with surprises, if there were any elements, provisions that jumped out to you.
I'm not sure that there was anything hugely surprising in there. There's not too much that we haven't heard before,
right,
at some point. The Senate has made a habit of putting a lot of policy ideas into the budget because their thought is that how we spend money and what our policies are intrinsically
they're
linked.
Yeah.
And so they believe that there's absolutely nothing wrong with putting some of these issues directly into their budget document. We always see more policy coming out of the Senate side. So things like the wind farms.
A moratorium on
the wind farms near the military bases, which has been one of those issues that has been argued up here for years, mm-hmm, of how are they going to deal with it. Well, so they're dealing with it by we're going to put it in the budget,
right,
and we're going to force the House to negotiate with us on this. I think for a lot of folks, it was surprising for them to see that the Senate actually put some raise the age language in the budget. There's not really a lot of money tied to it in the Senate budget, but this has always been an issue that's been over on the House side, and there's support for it on the House side,
mm-hmm,
but the Senate has never shown any sort of support for it.
Yeah.
And I think it was surprising to see that they were willing to put at least wording into the budget document on that. I think no surprise necessarily. I believe I'm correct in saying that since Republicans have taken over the Senate, they have not given any cost of living adjustments to retirees in their proposals.
A total of 2% COLA, cost of living adjustment for state retirees, over the last, I believe, seven budget cycles now, or 3.5 budget cycles, 7 years.
Which is something, I mean, you've heard from senators who have said to you, listen, if we're going to give anybody money, we're going to give the people who are out there actually working right now the money. And that's their philosophy, mm-hmm, behind it. I think for state retirees, they really...
Oh, it's disappointing. It's disheartening.
They really wanted the money this time. And I think we can expect to see some in the House budget. But to see that again come out when, mm-hmm, they've been pretty vocal this time about,
yes,
trying to get that was a little bit surprising.
Yeah. The Senate budget proposal called for 2.5% growth in state spending. That follows the governor's proposal a couple months ago with 5.1%. seems strategic almost that Governor Cooper didn't have a particularly progressive or hugely optimistic budget. I'm wondering if the House budget is going to be closer to Cooper's proposal than the Senate proposal. And based on what we saw last year, it very well could, it could be at 4 or 4.25, maybe.
I think that the House proposal is going to be closer number-wise to the governor's proposal. A couple reasons for that. Number one, they're not going to have as big of a tax cut in theirs. Mm-hmm. So they're going to have more money to spend in there. I think we're going to see a cost of living adjustment in there for retirees. I wouldn't be shocked to see a bigger pay raise for state employees. And some of these other issues, some of the projects that Democrats want, the House is more apt to actually put them into their budget because they like these ideas. It's just a matter of funding them.
Right.
And then, of course, we have to look, if the House puts this big ticket item of the raise the age in their budget, that is a substantial amount of money that they're going to be looking to spend. And they've already gone through the committee process with their raise the age bill. So right there, they're going to bump themselves a whole heck of a lot closer to Governor Cooper's.
So to that point, differences that we expect to emerge in the coming weeks and months, maybe, tax policy's got to be a big one because the Senate's tax proposal is a $1 billion cut. The House proposal, I believe, is only $300 million. But that's a difference of $700 million, math majors. And there's also the raise the age issue. You can expound on either of those. You can tell me to ask another question. Either, I guess, elaborate on those, or what other differences do you think we're really going to see the House and Senate negotiating over? What does this budget come down to?
I think the education funding is the biggest area of the budget, so it's always going to be a big deal. If the House strays at all from this teacher pay raise plan, which it's possible that they might, because of the fact that the more senior teachers don't get that big of a raise, you can see the House perhaps saying, okay, well, we'll do this then for them. You have those school construction funds. You see that the House has a proposal for a bond for school construction funds that they're hearing next week. So they're obviously trying a different route to that. But yeah, I think this tax issue is really going to be the sticking point of how much do we actually want to cut taxes, rearrange taxes for the state. And I think that that's what could keep us here for quite a while.
David Lewis, Rules Chair in the House. Tim Moore, Speaker of the North Carolina House, seemed to indicate that there might be a budget on the governor's desk by June 15th. What say you, Loretta?
I hope they're right. I'm not holding my breath.
Any other budget musings before I go in different directions?
I think that this process was very typical in the Senate to what we see in the Senate. They are very tight-lipped until they actually are ready to release what their budget document is. It's very fast-moving once they do release it. I'll tell you, after it was released, right before midnight?
Tuesday night.
Tuesday into Wednesday.
Yeah.
Here we are on Friday. Friday, it's been passed. I'm sure.
50 hours later.
Yes.
Roughly.
I am sure there's plenty I don't know that's in the Senate budget. There's plenty that the senators don't know is in the Senate budget, but that's how they do this. They move it very quickly. They hit the high points for folks. But yeah, we're going to be finding out what's in that Senate budget, probably from the House members, when they actually get it to take a look at it.
As they delve into it. Now, the speed with which budgets move forward, not just a Republican phenomenon. You saw this when Democrats were in power here as well.
Yeah. Oh, what I just described in the Senate is what the Senate Democrats also did. I mean, there's always the famous story of Senate Democrats putting a printed out budget bill on the desks of senators. It was still hot from coming off the copy machine, and they had a vote on it.
Consistency in some way, shape, or form here at the Legislative Building in Raleigh. We will note briefly, and it's been very nice to see a lot of different folks come into the press room the last 2 weeks and sign the remembrance book for Mark Binker. And I guess I just wanted to note that on the podcast again. You were among the many voices that remembered, reflected, talked about Mark last week. But it hasn't been surprising in any way, shape, or form, but it's just the governor and the speaker pro tem and the speaker, sure, but then there have been so many folks. There have been somebody ducked their head in this week and said, hey, I didn't know, Mark, is it okay if I sign the book, something like that?
From the western part of the state. Yeah. So this was somebody from McDowell County who simply read Mark's articles and said that this was somebody who I followed so that I knew what was going on in state government. And, you know, I think it's just been helpful for all of us. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's been helpful for his family to see how many lives he touched. And, you know, I've spoken to a lot of the elected officials as they've come in to sign the book. And everybody likes to talk about, you know, the press and elected officials either side of the aisle. You don't get along with them. And a lot of them have just, it's been the same sentiment from a lot of them that none of that really matters. We're such a small-knit group here. I think that the last couple of weeks, as awful and as hard as they've been, it's also been nice to see this community that we have here at the legislative building.
For sure. Loretta Beniti is on the WNC Politics podcast. You can catch her work on Spectrum News, formerly Time Warner 14, News 14, Time Warner Cable. Capital Tonight airs at 7 p.m. and midnight. Before we get out of here, we often just take like a left turn or a right turn on the podcast. I was going to ask you about travel because you, like me, are somebody who enjoys travel. And I was going to ask you, and you have no idea that I'm about to ask you about travel. So you're like, oh, crap, what is he about to ask me? You've been to some wonderful places from what you've shared. Do you have a favorite trip or a favorite place you've been? And on the flip side, somewhere you have yet to go that's like, got to get there.
Probably my favorite trip that I've ever taken was to Italy. Anybody who's been to Italy, I feel like they might agree with that. It's just a wonderful culture, wonderful food, so much to see, so much to do.
Specific region?
I did the high points. I want to go back to Italy. I've done the Rome, Florence. I want to go back and go to the countryside and all of that. Loved it. I actually have a trip planned in September to do a bucket list trip.
Got that burger and more. We need to be out of here by
September. That's right. Although they'll tell you when I go on vacation, things happen. In September, I'm going down to Argentina. That has been on my bucket list for a long time. There's so much about that country, different regions that I've wanted to go to, most notably the wine region, which is where I'm starting out.
As you should after 7 or 8 months of legislative musings and
so,
happenings.
So, yeah, that one's been on the list for a long time and finally getting to check that one off.
Good deal. Enjoy. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you.
That's all for this edition of the WUNC Politics Podcast. You can subscribe to the program on Stitcher, iTunes, and Google Play to find all the latest political stories from Jess Clark, Rusty Jacobs, and myself, Jeff Tiberi. Visit our website, wunc.org. Have a good weekend. Talk to you next week. There's a feeling you get